live, baby.
I'm ready. I'm so happy to be here, not in person.
Yes, I know.
It's, I wish that it's, you were in person.
Me too. I wish we were all in person together.
I'm cool with not being in person. Okay, cool. I'll see you all this time.
All right. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Ghost to Show You official podcast episode.
Yeah, this is the official one. So if you find another Ghost to Show You podcast,
not it.
They're not it. Imposters.
I'm Lillian.
I'm Emily.
And we have our guest.
Hi, Coco. I'm Coco.
Hi, thanks for being here.
Thanks, guys, for having me.
Oh, yeah.
I am genuinely happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks a lot, in quotes. Really appreciate
okay,
it.
Okay, this interview is over. I can't work
this is
under
what's hard
these...
is sarcasm is a tough medium with Zoom. It's not quite the right fit. It's
very I know, hard. And I upgraded my Zoom today, so I thought I would have the sarcasm capabilities, but...
Didn't come through. Yeah, it's tough.
That's the extra add-on you have to pay for.
A lot of fun. Coco, where are you broadcasting from, as it were?
I am in extremely spooky 90-degree Los Angeles right now.
Oh, beautiful.
It is gorgeous and bright and sunny outside, so I'm kind of glad because I am that person that if you tell me something terrifying after the sun has gone down, I will have a panic attack. So yeah. I like spooky things, but in the broad daylight, so this is perfect for me.
Great, the comfort of daylight. Yeah, we should only day-only recordings of Ghost to Show You, maybe. That would be good, you know?
I think we only have really done day recordings, except for the ones that when we go and stay overnight. And then, Coco, I get terrified. I mean, as maybe you've heard, I get sweaty, and I make Lillian share a bed with me, and I get scared, and I wake her up and stuff.
Yeah, she... I mean, it's kind of... You don't exactly force me. I'm more than willing to do a quick cud in the middle of the night, but I like it.
I feel like that's prerequisite of going somewhere haunted with someone else is holding hands the entire time.
For sure. I mean, I don't... Yeah, it would be too much to have separate rooms, to be honest.
Oh, my God.
No.
Too much money, for sure.
That's the bare minimum.
Yeah, it's just budget-wise, it doesn't make sense. That's the scary part, you know?
Well, you guys aren't getting laced out by Squarespace or anything like that?
Gosh.
Not yet. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
You know?
Squarespace, we're open for advertisers. It would be cool if there was some... Like, what if that that website that sells all the... ghost hunting equipment.
Oh, it's literally called like ghosthunter.com. I'm like, I love the simplicity and the straightforwardness of your product. It's incredible.
The branding,
I didn't know
it's right
everything.
On point.
I'm getting deep into the world of this profession, and it is everything I hoped for and more. So,
I mean, that's who should be advertising with us, you know?
Yeah, for all the fellow ghost hunters out there who are listening to this podcast.
We should reach out. We should reach out and just ask if they want to buy, you know, a
30-second
ad.
I'm going to say I'll pay you $20 if I get to say your name on our podcast. And
if
they'll
I get
be like,
to say,
oh, okay.
Listen, just send us a t-shirt as an official sponsorship of the pod.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Maybe send us that ghost hunting bear.
Ugh. Would love.
What?
Then I wouldn't have to spend the night with you, Emily. I could give you the Boo Bear to
you still
sleep
have
with.
To spend the night with me.
Okay.
Is it like a Build-A-Bear that's haunted or not
it's
haunted?
No, it's not.
It's a bear that contains alleged ghost hunting like equipment inside the bear. It's kind of like a Teddy Ruxpin, but for demons a little bit. And it can sense, you know, it's like a recorder inside. It senses frequencies, all that good stuff. But it's in the package of an adorable stuffed animal, which
which
is satanic
love.
In and of itself. Which ghosts famously love stuffed animals. So
yeah thanks. I hate it. I was scared by my cousin's Teddy Ruxpin, period, as a child.
They are scary, for sure.
So I don't want the ghost hunting one that then is like lighting up and beeping at 3 a.m.
Yeah, no, that would be terrifying, actually.
Yeah. You're right. All right.
Ooh. But I still would take a free one.
Yeah, if you're listening.
If you're listening.
Ghosthunter.com or whatever you're called.
Send us a t-shirt.
Anywho's, maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself generally, Coco, and kind of your vibe, you know?
Like my ghost vibe or like just normal times?
Normal times for now, and then we'll get into it.
And then we'll hop into the ghost vibe.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, so I live in LA. It's sunny and bright and beautiful, but also a very terrifying and spooky place.
Yes.
One of the things I love the most about it is that literally every neighborhood has some insane story or urban legend or murder or something like that.
Behind the veneer of the sunny LA happy thing lies a dark, festering darkness.
Yes.
Every single person I know who grew up in Los Angeles or has lived here, you know, let's say 30 plus years, has an OJ story, has an OJ connection. Like, my ex-boyfriend's cousin lived on Bundy across the street from the house. Like, all this nutso shit.
That's your Kevin Bacon kind of, you
that's
know. That's
my, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I live in L.A.
You're from California, or?
No, so, and that's, and as I'll tell you about my spooky house story, I grew up in New England and New Jersey. So, Northeast, all the way.
Hell yeah, baby.
Yeah, and, yeah, I live in Los Angeles. I've been in California, like, 10 years, and, I just got my master's degree in the midst of COVID, so...
Yay, wow, congratulations.
Thank you so much. I'm very fortunate because both I get to stay home, I live alone, which I actually love.
That's huge.
And the other great thing is that my apartment is not haunted.
That Woo! Is amazing, yeah.
And I found out early on, and I literally was talking to a friend of mine recently, and she made that point where she was like, what if you, like, lived in a really haunted house? Like, I feel like the activity would be... Like, how all the pets are going crazy because we're home all the time and they don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
She was asking if, you know, does the ghost, like, haunt you extra? Is the ghost mad that you're home all the time?
There's a New York Times article about this.
Shut up. Of course there is.
There's a recent New York Times article where this writer talked to a bunch of people who lived in haunted houses and who are now home all the time, and they talk about exactly what you're talking about.
Okay, so my friend regurgitated a New York Times article to me.
Well, we'll possibly see. Might want to call that person out and kind of put it on blast a little bit, I think.
It's fine. She probably won't listen to me talk anyway. But yeah, so when I actually moved into my apartment, this is a quick ghosty story, but so I moved into my place. And I live in a studio apartment in Los Angeles, like I said, and it was built in, like, 1936. It's very, if you've spent time in Southern California, you just know this type of courtyarded, U-shaped building.
Mm-hmm.
And so I moved in, and because I was in a different area, I now had a new weed delivery service.
Sure.
So I called them to come over and, you know, do their thing. And the guy comes in my house, and he sits down, and he's like, okay, my girlfriend just moved out of this apartment. That's crazy.
Whoa. Oh,
weird.
So he was like, oh, you must, like, literally she moved out in, like, whatever it was, March. You moved in April. Crazy coincidence. She used to live here. And then apropos of nothing, he just goes, it's not haunted.
Oh, my God.
And then he, like, gives me a look. Because I'm just sort of processing that. And he's like, I'm so sorry. That's actually, like, I shouldn't even say it. That's, like, a really fucked up thing to tell someone when they just moved to their new place. And, like, I was like, that is the best possible thing you could have told me.
Yeah. But, like, that, what that story implies to me is that they were like, is this place haunted? Let's investigate. And he's like, okay, we concluded from our investigation that this apartment is not haunted.
Right. They got that teddy bear with the radar in it.
Yep. And,
so that's what he said, exactly, Emily. He was like, there, because it's an old building, it has old plumbing, it has the water tank in the kitchen, he's like, you'll hear these weird-ass, like, whistling or clanking noises, and it's strictly that this is an old building with old plumbing. He's like, but for the first month she lived here, she was like, I have a ghost in my kitchen, like, I'm losing it. Every night, I'm hearing these noises. So they did investigate, figured out what it was, and then he was like, so don't worry, you're gonna live alone, and you're gonna hear, like, whistling coming from your kitchen at 3 a.m, but it's totally cool. It's not a ghost.
That's
I
so
love that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Everyone really should have to say that to the next tenant when they
move
out.
I was going to say, they should have to check it off on the lease, just like haunted or not haunted. Or
New Orleans style. Yeah.
Right, and don't you have to do disclosures if someone, like, died in a house or was murdered in a house for a certain number of years? Like, ghosts are forever, so you should always have to disclose.
Agree. We're gonna bring that into law. We're gonna get that in there. You know, take it all the way to the top.
Hashtag ghosts are forever.
Mm-hmm. Gorgeous.
Life is finite, but ghosts are forever.
That's right. Every kiss begins with K.
Well, the whole theory, right, is that the energy has to go somewhere else. So then it becomes a ghost and it hangs around your house. And then when you banish the ghost, I don't think it just, like, disappears. Like, it has to go somewhere else.
Well, totally. But also, theoretically, not every person who dies becomes a ghost. A theory is that ghosts only stick around when they have some sort of unfinished business, or if maybe they get confused or something. But sometimes they just move on. And I don't know how I reconcile the fact that I do believe in reincarnation, but I also believe in ghosts. So maybe the spirits who are ghosts do not get reincarnated, right? Because they're still sticking around.
I didn't know that you believed in reincarnation.
Oh, yeah. I'm not positive I believe in reincarnation, but it's something that I maybe believe in.
Well, I would appreciate you kind of letting me know when these beliefs sort of start. You know, I want to be... So in the future, can you just... Okay, great.
That's a pretty big one. My paternal grandfather had a wild-ass life, and late in life, like his mid-50s, moved to Thailand from England and converted to Buddhism.
Wow.
And took it very seriously and was in, you know, you have to be a monk for a certain amount of time, did all this stuff, learned Thai, lived in Bangkok until he died decades later.
Cool.
And I still have a letter that he wrote me at an inappropriately young age, like probably under the age of 16, where he was like, you know, sometimes I start to think about I'm getting older and, you know, death is imminent. And I worry that because I was an atheist for the first, you know, 50 whatever years of my life, you know, I'm pretty low on the rung for reincarnation. So I think next time I'm coming back as like a cricket.
And you're like, oh, what?
Like, granddad, don't die, please.
That's so funny.
He's and such plus, a weird
oof, dude. It's a lot to grapple with. Yeah.
If you come back as a cricket, though, your lifespan's going to be so short that you're going to be moving up the food chain pretty quickly, if you think about it, you know?
I think that's for the best. So who knows? Maybe he's already a dog by now.
We'll be great. Maybe I would love that.
Your dog.
Yeah.
Maybe he's Emily's definitely not.
Dog. Yeah. No. Okay.
Could be my dog.
Very different personality. Maybe it's Hades.
Could be Hades.
That could be the spirit you're sensing.
Do you have something to tell me?
Is your name Dennis?
Dennis. She opened her eyes.
Stop it.
Granddad.
Oh my God.
All right, we've got to do a dog swap. Your grandfather should be with you. meet me in the middle of the country. We're both going to drive straight line.
Perfect. Perfect.
Okay. I love that.
Okay, so what? Tell us, like, briefly about your history with the paranormal, just like how your life has been informed by it, or how you've always thought about it, and then your stories.
So I just can't even think of a time where I didn't believe that ghosts existed. And I think that's a combination of when you're younger and you believe more in things that you can't see. But also that from a pretty young age, we lived in a house that I felt was haunted or had some kind of energy or spirit going on. So basically from the jump, I was like, I think this is real because I feel like I've seen enough evidence that it's something.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and then later in life, I had a really intense experience where I lost a friend very suddenly when she was pretty young, 28 years old, and she was around, like, I don't really know how else to put it. And that then, I think at that point in adulthood, when I maybe would have gone, okay, I'm going to be more rational and think, you know, maybe that's childhood imagination or fancy. Then you start realizing that as an adult, you're like, oh, I'm having experiences where I still feel like there are energies present. There are things I feel that are not being said or displayed. Yeah, and then losing that friend, I just felt so almost immediately like her presence was around that I just continued that belief because it never left. I kept seeing enough evidence to keep me believing.
Right.
Can you talk about what, like, as a child you thought or felt or saw? Or...
So it's funny, I'm an insane Virgo, which also comes up later in my story, but
perfect.
So I did research. I like looked up the ages of, or like when the houses I lived in were built.
Love
because
that.
I kind of assumed based on the area, and I was actually surprised. So when I was, let me think, from when I was 3 years old to when I was 8 years old, we lived in a house in Massachusetts, in the suburbs of Boston. Kid.
Hell yeah. And, what suburb can you tell me? Sorry, I know.
Yeah, no, Dover.
Oh yeah, okay, cool.
So, you know, like real fancy, real horsey, good schools. My parents were like, we're gonna find a cheap little house to live in here that's not a huge mansion so that our kids mm-hmm. could go to this good public school.
Sure.
So they found this gorgeous house, but it was haunted. And
was it like cheaper than it should have been? And then you were like, oh, I see why now?
So here's the thing. I was looking at the, I like went full tilt. I went down the Zillow, like
we
the prices.
Really appreciate that you
yes,
did do that.
I love this.
Wish every
this
guest did research.
This is my crazy ass. So one of the things that's interesting about this house is that it's definitely been like refreshed and expanded since we lived there. So the price has steadily gone up. And also I think it's in a pretty, you know, classy part of Massachusetts. So I think property values go up there. But I did look at it and I was like, this was a very relative steal for the area at the time that my parents bought it. Now, whether that's just due to the fact that it wasn't like the schmanciest, hugest house or whether that they knew there was ghostly activity, I don't know, but it was a little bit cheaper. So there's a theory there. But we moved in. Yeah. So I was three. So, I mean, that's like conscious memories start in that house for me. And there were a couple of things that happened maybe like six or seven times over that period of time that just, I couldn't think of explanations for. Happened when I was by myself, of course, so no one would believe me. And also when you're a little kid, you exaggerate, and my parents are already like, you're a pathological liar on a good day. Like, so coming in and telling us that you saw something or heard something. So we lived in this house, and it was built in 1914. And one of the interesting things about it is that it had a horse stable out back. Mm-hmm. So it had like a two-stall wooden horse stable. And I guess that was either that, you know, 1914, you were either using that as agricultural property and using horses for that, or you were taking a horse into town.
Mm-hmm.
Or to the Boston Common, or who the hell
knows.
Sure,
sure.
So there was this horse stable behind, and my parents are both really into gardening, so they would keep it, like, kind of use it as a shed, like, tools and tillers and all the crap back there. And I would walk by it constantly to get up into the woods behind our house, which, you know, if you're a suburban child of the 90s, you just go around in the woods.
Absolutely.
Maybe find, like, a dead animal or some old porn or something, you know.
If you're lucky. Classic.
Yeah.
A good day.
And so both on this, both would be perfect.
So I went.
Sorry.
Oh, it's fine. So
keep it professional, Devane.
Okay, all right.
So yeah, there was this horse stable, and I would walk by it to go up into the woods where I would play. And a number of times when I was walking up, I would walk by it to a certain point, and what freaked me out about it was always when I was at the same distance away from the stable. Not when I was next to it, not when I was behind it, not when I was farther away from it, always at sort of the same spot. And I would hear horses. Like, you would hear, like, a stamp and, like, kind of a jingle, like a bridle, maybe?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I went and told my parents this at some point, and they said, well, you know, there's people who have horses around here.
Right.
And I looked it up because I'm a psychopath and do research. The nearest horse that would have been near us was, like, at least a half a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably weren't hearing a horse
from
that far.
I don't think it was
stamping.
Yeah.
Right.
And and again, it was that thing of not every time you go by, not every week or even every year, but probably about six or seven times maybe where you would walk to the certain point on the path and you would hear what sounded like horses down the hill in the stable right behind you.
Huh.
Weird. Crazy.
So maybe there are animal ghosts is another theory.
I believe it.
I mean, a lot of people talk about animal ghosts. I've read a lot of stories of people being like, there's a cat haunting my apartment or like things like that. Seriously.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, like a place will be haunted and it's almost like there's sort of a scene stuck on a loop. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like people will see people doing the same thing, or they'll go into an old hotel and, you know, there's people in the ballroom or whatever.
Right. And there's a bartender and he tells you to kill your wife and children.
The whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys have stayed at that place, right?
Oh, yeah.
I wish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a weird thing of, like, it almost, see, it wasn't, like, some horse being, like, I'm going to fucking kill you, let me out of here.
Right.
It was just this weird, like, little thing.
Yeah.
But kind of made sense because it's a stable, but also makes no fucking sense because there's no horses.
Right.
So that was the first thing that would happen. The second thing that happened twice that I remember very, very vividly because it was so scary was... there was one chair in my dad's office that I would sit in that had a very high back. So it was like an armchair, but, you know, and also being 5-6 years old, it came way, way up over my head. Mm-hmm. And
was it an old chair or like a new chair?
No, it was like probably Ethan Allen.
Okay.
Sure.
Knowing it was, I think, 92. They weren't in the Pottery Barn shit yet.
Yeah. Sponsored by Ethan Allen.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was like, yeah, it was this new chair and it had this really tall back and I would sit in it because it was really cozy and I liked reading in this chair, and so I'd sit in it a lot. And there were two times where I was home completely by myself in that chair and felt like a person's hand on my shoulder.
Ugh.
Very quickly and like a squeeze and then nothing.
Dang.
But I just remember it so distinctly, being that young, being alone, feeling something that was physically impossible of something touching you from behind a chair that's against a wall kind of thing.
Right.
It just is like very vivid in my memory. And I remember it happened twice in the same spot. And I was terrified.
And you're like, of course. We're not reading in this chair anymore.
Yeah, and there were certain things in the house like that where I just sort of adapted of, okay, I don't like being in this room by myself, or I don't like, you know, going to the bathroom in the middle of the night, or things like that, where I don't even think you probably realize it, but you just do things a little differently because you're freaked out.
You don't even necessarily consciously adjust your behavior, but you do. And you're like, oh yeah, I don't sit in that chair anymore, or... I don't
right.
Do
well,
that thing.
It's like when you're a kid that your whole belief system is just like not, you know, it's not like a real adult's like rational. So you're just like, yeah, that's just what happens, and I don't like it, so I'm just gonna not sit in the ghost chair anymore. You know.
I kept going by the scary ass stable because I wanted to go fuck around in the woods, but you know,
and that's not that to me doesn't sound so scary. I mean, it's definitely weird, but it's also like, oh, it's daytime and. I heard a horse.
Right.
Yeah. The hand thing definitely freaked me out. And then the scariest one, because it happened in my room, was there was... So my room was kind of like almost like a diamond shape, like the way a baseball diamond is positioned. Mm-hmm. And in sort of the first base and the third base positions was first base would be the door to the hallway. And then third base would be the door to this little storage room. Which to this day, I've tried to figure out like what in the house that would have been, or what, and I think it was always a storage room, even in 1914. I think
old,
it was like the room for your
historic.
Shit.
Ye old
historic.
Yeah. Ye old junk drawer, you know? Like. So, of course, being off my bedroom, my parents, like, you know, my brother and all our old toys would be in there and all our stuff would be in there. And so, yeah, so it was a door off of my bedroom, and I would. A couple of times wake up in the middle of the night, just come, you know, that type of thing where you just wake up like something has woken you but there's no sound, wake up, be wide awake, alert, and the door to the storage room, the doorknob would turn, the door would open a little bit, close again, and then a little bit later the hallway door, the knob would turn, open a little bit, close again.
Oh,
No.
The knob would turn?
That's crazy.
Like someone was opening the door from inside the storage room.
Yeah. Walking into your room. Cracking it
open. Walking across the room. It would be, you know, like 15 yeah. seconds after. So walk across the room, open the door of the hallway, close it.
Ugh. No, that is nuts.
That sucks. Did
that happen more than one time?
Yeah. Like, again, I think it was maybe like 5 times over 5 years kind of thing. But I remember when it, and I remember like the first couple times it happened, I, you know, ran out of my room like a bat out of hell and, you know, and, oh, you had a nightmare, go back to bed. And I was like, maybe it was a nightmare.
Right. Oh.
Totally. So it's interesting too, because like, my brother, when we lived in this house, had really bad night terrors.
Ooh.
Which are, like, a little different than having a nightmare, because you're kind of, like, sleepwalking and you're kind of, like, in it.
Well, you're, like, paralyzed.
Yeah, like, in some ways, some people have it where it's, like, that's sleep paralysis, right? And that sometimes can be it, but, like, night terrors is kind of, like, a thing a lot of little kids get. They have these super vivid nightmares, and so they, like, get up and walk around or are doing something because they think they're in the dream. Right. And my brother would get these really bad. And I have no idea if, you know, that might just be a developmental thing. Who the hell knows? But also, like, years later, I had an experience where I was constantly dreaming about someone who had died, and I felt like that was how they were getting in contact with me. So I almost wonder if there was, like, something to that of, like, when we're little kids, you know, the dream state is very nebulous. A lot of things come to you in that, like, thin veil. It's, like, similar to the thin veil of the dead.
Sure.
And I see kids are more susceptible to that type of energy, I think.
I was the youngest at our house by 4 years. And, so at first I would think it was a nightmare. And I'd be like, oh, I just dreamed the door open. But it happened repeatedly enough that I was, like, okay, I'm awake. Like, I know this. Like, and this is the kind of thing, you know, you would have to turn it and open it. It's not blowing open. It's not a dream. It is happening. But I also then was like, but I'm not going to tell anybody because no one thinks it's real and you can't do anything about it anyway. And it didn't hurt.
Right.
Really.
Right.
Like, it scared me. But I also just kind of, even when the thing with the hand touching my shoulder, I was terrified, but I didn't feel
threatened.
Malice or like, I wasn't like, I need to get out of here. It's going to get me. It was like, that was spooky.
Right. Right.
Damn. That's very scary. Especially in the middle of the night when you're just like, oh God.
You feel so helpless as a kid anyway. And then you have this whole, like, you're like touching another dimension and you're just like, okay, well, I guess I got to keep this to myself. So crazy.
Right, like when I said that a horse was nearby, you know, then I said there was a ghost horse. It was like, no, it's just the horse down the road that you could never humanly hear.
Right.
So I knew if I said, well, the door opened in the middle of the night, it would be, well, it swung open or the door is old or whatever.
Right.
Damn.
Yeah.
You started young.
Not anything at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. And, like, it's funny also because my parents were very vehemently, like, it's not haunted. Like, you're, you know, being a goofball. Like, you know, you're just making stuff up. But then later when we moved to New Jersey a few years later, we moved not that long after my grandmother had passed. And my grandmother was, like, haunting my mom, allegedly.
Really?
That's what my mom, and she wouldn't really tell me about it, but my mom was like, oh, I feel like after grandma died, like, she followed us to the house in New Jersey, and I would have all these dreams about her that were really vivid, and there was, like, one time where I thought I saw her somewhere, and that's kind of, like, all she would say about it. My mom's also a little cuckoo, so who knows? Like,
your mom's like, I don't want you to have been right about our old house, so I'm just
Well, that's what was funny is I was like, well, what the hell? Like, we believe in ghosts now? Like,
because I seem to recall that when I told you about horse ghosts, you just
brushed it off. Yeah.
So, and that's kind of funny because that was, like I said, like, I had these things as a kid where I was like, okay, we lived in this haunted house. We, you know, like, I've seen enough spooky shit that I think ghosts are real. And then when I was older, in my mid-20s, I lost this close friend of mine. And it was really sudden. She was in a car accident and just died immediately. And before anyone gets on my ass about it, wasn't a DUI. She wasn't drunk. Like,
oh my God. Imagine someone being like, well,
yeah, but did she have it coming?
Oh. Yo, this is my favorite thing when you tell people your friend died young in a car accident. They go, well, was she drinking?
Oh my God. That's awful.
So, no, she wasn't. Ugh. But this is, I mentioned this also because it feeds into it. So, she basically, before she died, the year before she died, she had like this horrible year. She and I were working together at this god-awful tech startup in San Francisco. And it was that thing of like, oh, you're finally getting paid decently, but you get treated like shit every single day. Mm-hmm. And she eventually got fired from them in like this really dumb political, like, we basically don't like the guy you used to work for, so we're going to fire you once he's gone. So this girl was like, super type A. I met her when I was in undergrad in Boston. She was at Harvard. She was like that kid who did every single thing her parents ever wanted her to do, everything society could commend you for, she had. And she like got fired from this job and it just threw her world into a spiral.
Right.
So she had this really tough time and she was really depressed and really sad. And I think had like a lot of shame of like, oh, like I couldn't hack it with this thing and, you know.
Right. Especially when you're achieving your whole life, it's really difficult to deal, I'm sure, with that type of setback or failure.
Exactly. It was kind of the first time where it was like, oh, you did something that like socially is a fuck up. So she was really bummed out and just, you know, I had a tough time with her being friends during that period because it's that thing when someone is really depressed, and if you have depression as well, where you're a little like, I can't get too close to the waterfall's edge, you're gonna take me in.
Right.
Totally.
So we kind of like grew apart and then grew closer together, and she got in touch with me and basically said, hey, I have a bunch of like books and stuff I've borrowed from you. I'm gonna be going out of town. Can I come by and like drop it off and we'll get lunch and hang out? So I'm like, okay, yeah. She comes over and she brings the stuff and she's like, I'm moving to Northern California, like way up in the boonies, got a job on a farm. I'm just going to like fuck off out of Dodge and go. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. Great. And so I see her and we have lunch and she gives me my stuff back. I'm like, all right, have a great time. You know, call me next time you're back in the city. And she drives off and she's leaning out the window of her van and she goes, sayonara, suckers. I was like, what a weirdo. And I never saw her again. She died like 6 weeks after that. And her parents were like very separate from her social life. So when the services happened, you know, a lot of her friends weren't involved in that. And we didn't get that chance to like all be together and be with her family and her sister and mourn her together. So it was this really weird thing of like the day she died, like I had my cousin visiting. And it was like her birthday. We were going out to dinner. It was one of those things of like you just couldn't drop anything that was happening. You're just like, okay, keep going. Like, I'll deal with this in a week. I'll deal with this in a month. I'll deal with this in 6 months. And just kind of. And very, very shortly after she passed away, I started having really intense dreams about her. And the most common one was that the apartment I lived in at the time had a fire escape right outside the window of my bedroom. And I would have dreams that she was tapping on the window and waking me up and that she was out on the fire escape and she was like on the ladder and hanging and, you know, swaying and waving to me and like goofing off. And I would have this dream and I would be so, I'd be like, you cannot, you're going to fall. You're going to die. You're going to fall off this thing and break your neck.
Right.
Of course, she already had broken her neck and died, but I was to the point these dreams were getting so strong that there were multiple times where I woke up out of bed at the window.
Oh my God.
Really?
Yeah.
Like you had slept walked to the window.
Like, I mean, slept walked is generous considering the size of the apartment.
Okay.
But slept, I had rolled over from my side, gotten out of bed, was standing up and like had my hands on the glass of the window.
Oh my God.
So that's, I was having these
crazy
insane dreams about her. Or I would have dreams that she would be biking by me and just going faster and faster and faster and faster. And I'd be trying to catch up to her. And I would wake up and I would be like sweating and out of breath. They were just the most real, vivid dreams about her. And it was always me trying to stop her from doing something dangerous. So I had these dreams, and I shortly thereafter, I guess it was maybe like a couple years after she had died, maybe 2 years after she passed away, I went and saw this amazing astrologer / psychic medium named Jessica Lagnado, who's like now super internet famous and hard to get an appointment with. But I got very lucky in like whatever it was, 2015, and I had this session with her, which I recorded and re-listened to for this podcast.
Amazing.
Because I wanted to remember exactly what she said. And so towards the end of the session, we were talking and she said, you know, is there anything sort of on the mediumship end that you're interested in talking about or contacting? I said, yeah, you know, I had this friend. She passed away really young in an accident. And Jessica just immediately said, head injury. And I said, yeah, okay, you know. Pretty statistically common for her age.
And, sure.
You know, and she goes, she wasn't drunk, but she was having fun. She was doing something she really enjoyed at the time that she died. And I said, well, I don't know that. And I'm, you know, told her some about the dreams I was having. And Jessica's response just completely freaked me out, because what she said was that my friend had no regrets. She felt that she died when she was supposed to. That she was scared of dealing with, that she had found happiness in her life, but she wasn't sure how she was going to sustain it long term. Mm-hmm. She had kind of escaped this old life and come into this new one, but wasn't really sure how to keep going with it. So she felt like dying young was okay for her and was the right time. And then she said, she thinks your life is worse than hers. She thinks you're a sucker.
Wow.
Me and Lillian's jaws both dropped for the listeners at home. Wow, what a crazy thing to say.
And literally the last thing that this friend had said to me, you know, and it's a joke and it's a common saying, but sayonara suckers. But I was just like.
But that word.
And saying she thinks your life is worse than hers is absolutely the kind of thing my friend would have said if she was alive.
Wow.
So I felt very convinced. And Jessica was just immediately like, she's like, yeah, she's around you. Like, you walked in with someone today. Wow. Like, I didn't know who it was, but you came in with a second presence behind you. And she's trying to get your attention. She was like, that's why you're having these dreams. She knows that's the way to get your attention is hang off the fire escape. She needs you to see that she's free and she's okay and she can't get hurt anymore. She can fall off the fire escape and break her neck 1,000 times now.
Wow.
And it was really amazing, and it felt to me very true of, you know, it's hard to convey, but it felt very much of like that person's voice and words and choices were like being channeled in that moment, and that I received the message that she had for me.
Right. Gosh, was it overwhelming and emotional and all of that?
Yeah, it was really, it was like, and also it was that thing of, you know, it's both the sort of paranormal psychological aspect of like, yeah, I hadn't really taken the time to sit down and be sad about it and mourn it and deal with it. And that was a lot of also what this medium told me, was she was like, you have to do that, because that's why she's coming to you in your dreams and biking by you and showing up in people's faces and crowds, is she's trying to tell you, you got to let go
of
that. Was
that happening too? Wow. She was showing up on people's faces?
Like, I would just think I'd see her a lot. Right. Which I think is a really common thing when you lose someone. And again, who knows if that is paranormal or psychological. I think those things are really
intertwined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she was like, you got to do something with this. And so by that point, one of the really nice things was that my friend's family had gotten a memorial bench for her in Golden Gate Park, so that we all kind of like had a place to go that was her place and a place
just
she really
as soon
loved.
As you kick the stoners off the bench, then you could just sit there.
They're fancy, smart people who got one in the conservatory where you have to pay admission.
Damn.
Is that what your friend would have wanted? Pay to sit?
That's what her parents wanted. Sure. She would have been like, put me on Hippie Hill. Like, she went to Burning Man right before she died. Like, she would have been doing, like, devil sticks in front of the conservatory, you know? Like, God bless Golden Gate Park. Yeah. So, yeah, so she had this bench, and I went on what would have been her 30th birthday and brought a candle and some flowers for her and, like, did my thing. I sat there for a really long time and talked to her and just said, I hear what you're saying. I now get why you were trying to tell me this. And I'm going to, like, make changes in my life to honor you, because I think that's what you're getting at, is you see that I'm really unhappy with a lot of the things in my life right now, and you're trying to kick me up the ass. And right. I hear you, and I will do it, and I promise I will try to be more adventurous and more, you know, try to live life in a way that would make you happy and proud. And, yeah, I just had this long conversation, and I said, I miss you, and it really hurts, but I know that that's my pain and not yours, and I know that you're okay, and, like, that makes me feel a lot better. And right. after that day and when I went to the park, I have not had a dream about her since then.
Wow.
She doesn't appear in my dreams anymore, even in, like, a non-threatening or scary or crazy way. Right. And I think a lot of that was, like, that release of, like, I had to let go because she was hanging around trying to tell me something.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
That's so intense. And, like, yeah, the... There is, like, when you talk about, like, ghosts or paranormal stuff, there is, like, oftentimes just so much, like, of a human element and, like, grief, and it's just, like, all so much part of it. And, yeah, I don't know. I that's why I love, like, thank you for sharing this story.
Yeah, yeah, like, I'm so grateful that I got to have that experience, you know, because I really feel like...
A lot of people don't get that necessarily.
A lot of people don't get that.
Or catharsis or, you know...
And it was that thing also of, you know, the first person in your life who passes away, who's your age or close to your age, is, like, a very significant thing in people's lives. And I think happens to everybody at some point.
Yeah.
And that was mine. And it was really helpful of, like, okay, so there's grief and there's hurt and you're not immune just because you're young or you live in a certain place or you're...
Of course.
Whatever.
Right.
And... In a way that made me more comfortable with the idea of death or things happening, or I knew that it wasn't all bad. Whatever's on the other side, I don't know what it is. I don't know that it's all good, but I know it's not all bad.
Yeah. That's such a, what a comfort to have.
Yeah. This medium also told me that I'm terrified of the afterlife, and that was part of why I was rejecting this ghost coming to me, is that she was like, you just don't want to know, period. You just want to die and, like, go away, and whatever happens, happens. But if you have to think about it while you're alive, it'll torture you.
Huh.
She was like, that's why you don't want to talk to your friend.
Like,
but she would not let you not talk.
Yeah. She sounds like a good pushy friend in the right way.
A great pushy friend. I mean, I will say cheers to her literally texting me when I don't want to talk to her, even from the afterlife.
Oh, my God.
That's but so I'm incredible. Very grateful that we got to, like, have that and that it helped me process my grief. I think it helped. And I don't think it was like she was waiting to go to heaven until I learned this lesson. Like, I don't think that's really how it works. But no. She was coming to me in dreams because that was a way she could access me to signal what was going on.
Yeah. Right, right. Wow.
Crazy
and
shit, man.
I also love what you said. I just want to say it again when you just said that the pain was not her pain, that's your pain. Because I, you know, when you're grieving and when you're thinking about people who have passed, I think that's important to keep in mind. Because I don't also personally believe in hell. So I'm like, right. You know what, whatever their pain was, you know, like a friend who has committed suicide, whatever their pain was, they're not in that pain. They've moved on. They're whatever.
Right.
They're part of the trees now or whatever it is. So any pain is my pain. And that is comforting to me.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure.
And when people have sicknesses, like I, you know, when I was young, I watched my grandmother pass away from pancreatic cancer. And that was in some ways so much worse. Of just watching that person deteriorate. Or like my other grandmother had Alzheimer's. Like that person goes away. You start mourning them before they're even dead. Right. So it was a really helpful thing for me. Yeah, and I think that's maybe... That's our lesson of the day, kids. It's your pain. It's not their pain. They're gone. They can't feel it anymore.
Stop putting your shit on those dead people. Okay?
Listen to me. Yeah.
And
if a friend comes to you in a dream, then just, you know what? See what they have to say.
It's also like that's something that you can think of for like interactions with people who are alive. Like most of the shit that happens is your own thing. It's not them. It's your shit, you know.
Oh yeah, so, I have to keep that in mind a lot.
I know it's a hard. I have not learned that lesson exactly, but
I don't have that problem because I'm always right.
It's a big Virgo energy.
I know.
Big Virgo.
It should be a requirement for all our guests to be Virgos at this point because you really brought the thoroughness.
We bring
to this.
Research, we bring communication through Mercury, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I love it.
This medium astrologer who connected with me and my friend also said to me, direct quote, "You have so much Virgo in your chart, I don't know how you sleep at night. I've never seen someone with this much Virgo in their chart."
Wow. That's intense. I was
like, thanks?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Yeah, it's a little bit of a negging from that person. That's
sounds
funny.
Like jealousy to me.
Hmm. Yeah, I think jealousy. We make the world run whether you guys realize it or not.
I know.
And most serial killers are also Virgos, so, you know.
Something to think about.
Good social skills. Persuasive.
Ability to murder.
You know? Perfectionist. Yeah, you guys really
good
at done.
Capacity for cold-blooded killing.
Beautiful.
It can't all be good.
Right.
No, but thank God you use your Virgo powers for good, Coco.
It's true.
It's so true. Yeah. It's hard, but...
you make it work.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for talking to us, to our listeners, about your story and your experience.
It's a beautiful story.
Really, really cool to hear. Thank you.
Oh, my God. Thank you guys so much. I'm so happy to share and tell more spooky good stories because I love them. I love during the daylight hours when it's bright outside listening to a good spooky story about a real ghost while I walk my dog outside.
Yes.
And then can sleep at night. That's my fave.
We will continue to provide that for you.
Well, job bless. You're providing a community service.
Thank you so much, Coco. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Ghost to Show You is created by Lillian Devane and me, Emily Panic. Editing and production is by me. Our original artwork is by Paco Park, and our theme song is by LP. If you have a true ghost story that you'd like to share, you can email us at ghosts2showyou@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram @ghosts2showyou. If you like the podcast, please rate, review, subscribe, and tell your mom about it. She might like it. Thanks for listening. See you next time.